It's the Musical Theater Book Club. Let's talk about a show. Welcome to Musical Theater Book Club, where we talk about our favorite musicals, our least favorite musicals, and everything in between. I'm Berkeley.
I'm Sarah.
And today we're talking about Broadway's biggest night, the Tony Awards, which aren't happening this year, unfortunately.
The Tonys. Always around my birthday, which is always really fun. It's like a nice little birthday present. So I'm so sad this year. I feel like I have like a whole present that I've lost.
Yeah. I mean, come on. Instead, you get like a Grease sing-along.
I know. People are so angry about that. I like Grease, but I understand why people are angry. Like, they could have picked so many other things, and I don't know why they picked Grease. Like, I guess just because it's like a family-friendly movie. That's my only, like, it's an older one that people would watch. That's the only thing I can think of.
Yeah, I guess it makes sense. It'll track a wide audience. The story's not great, and there's some points in it. We're not talking about Grease today. I'm not going to get into it. Okay, so let's talk a little bit about the Tonys. I love them so much. I mean, every theater person loves them. In high school, we used to have, like, Tony watching parties, and those were the greatest things. I haven't done one of those in years. We should do a Tony's watching party next year.
I know. I'm trying to think. I know we did. Me and you watched them together. Mm-hmm. Where was it? It was a few years ago because you were living down in L.A. Do you remember?
I do slightly remember. Oh, yeah, you were down in L.A. for CatCon.
Yes, we were down there for CatCon. And it was perfect because that was also for my birthday. And then you came over and we watched the Tonys. And I think that's the last time I've watched them like with someone else because, you know, my boyfriend's not going to watch them. He likes musical theater, but he's not like, you know, a crazy musical theater person. So like I'm usually just kind of watching them by myself.
Yeah, normally I end up watching them by myself. So it's fun to be able to like have somebody to talk with. Let's talk a little bit about the history. So the Tonys were founded in 1947 by the American Theater Wing, and they were named after Antoinette Perry, an actress, director, producer, and American Theater Wing fighter that had recently passed away.
The other thing I thought was really cool when I was looking it up is that they're not even just called, like, the Tonys. Like, that's just, like, the easy, you know, quick way to talk about them. Like, their full name is the Antoinette Perry Awards for Excellence in Broadway Theater. And I was just like, wow, I can understand why they have shortened that just to make it easier to talk about. But I was like, when I first saw that, I thought it was super cool, first of all, that it even had a full name and that it was named after a woman because, you know, you don't see that a lot in anywhere. So
it's true. It's so true. And the first ceremony had 11 Tonys, 7 categories and 8 special awards. I think it's funny that they had more special awards than regular awards.
Yeah.
Right? there were more than 1,000 people at those first Tonys.
Oh, one of the cool things about the special awards that I noted was one of them was for Vincent Sardi.
I saw that.
Sardi's. Yeah. I was like, hey, I know that name. So I thought that was just kind of a nice circle.
Yeah. Sardi's is the place, for people who don't know, where they have the caricatures of all like Broadway performers and shows and stuff like that on the walls.
Yeah. I still haven't actually gone there.
Have you gone there? No, I haven't. I don't know why I haven't gone there.
I know. It's like one of those places where you're like, oh, yeah, I'll go when I go to New York. And then you just end up doing everything else. Like, yep. I think I walked by it a couple times. Just a couple fun things about the first Tonys. Yep. So a couple other things was it only cost $7 to go. And it actually was really, really popular that it jumped from $7 to $10, which I know now doesn't seem like that's a lot. But you think about, like, that's a pretty good inflation. And then I ended up looking up the price of how much it costs to go to the Tonys now. And it was actually a lot less than I was expecting. It's only about $525 to $725 a ticket, which is still a lot of money. Don't get me wrong. That is still very expensive. But I was expecting like $1,000. So when I saw that, I was like, oh, that's not nearly as expensive as I was expecting. Because I was thinking like the equivalent of a Super Bowl. So I was like, oh, yeah, it's probably going to be incredibly expensive to go. And I was like, oh, that's like a, you know, if you really, really, really want to. And, like, you have the money, it's affordable.
What I'm hearing is we need to save up and go next year.
Yeah, what are we doing?
Let's go.
So the first awards, before they actually had, you know, the beautiful one that they have now, was actually a scroll, a cigarette lighter, and articles of jewelry. So for the women, they got a compact and a bracelet, and for men, they got money clips. And it wasn't until the third year that they actually had the medallion that we now see.
So now we're going to jump from 1947 to 1956. This is the first time the Tonys were televised. It wasn't a national televisation. Is that a word? I don't know if that's a word, but I'm making it a word. Yeah, sure. It was only in New York, and I don't know if it was just in the area of the city or if it was like statewide. So then in 1966, this is the one I think is really interesting, the chairwoman of the wing, and up at this time, I believe it was the chairwoman who would host the Tonys. At the time, it was Helen Mankin. She passed, and the ceremony was subdued and held in the afternoon and had no entertainment. So I think that's really sweet. I mean, it's obviously it's really sad, but I think it's a nice way to honor such an important person to the Tonys at the time. So then we're jumping to the following year, 1967. This is when it's first nationally televised, which I think is awesome. So we're going to talk about some performances later. I think I have some from 1967, actually. Oh, no, got my numbers mixed up. 1976, just kidding. In 1978, CBS picks up the Tonys, and it has now been broadcasted through CBS since. CBS and PBS did share the broadcast from 1997 to 2002. It was a weird sort of thing where the PBS would get an hour before, and they would do 10 awards, and then the last 2 hours would go to CBS.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, and I don't know if it was a change the channel now. I would expect it would have to be, which just seems like such a weird thing to me. It's like the Macy's Thanksgiving Day Parade. You're like, okay, well, I want to see this performance, so I'm going to watch it on CBS. But then this performance is happening on NBC, so I have to switch over there.
Yeah. That's cool for PBS, though. Look at them.
Yeah. Obviously, it wasn't a very good deal they had going, though, because it's not a thing anymore.
Yeah. It seems like it was cool idea, but not well executed.
Yeah. It seems pointless. So in 1977... that's the same year that CBS and PBS started sharing. That's when it moves from Broadway to Radio City. And they started doing the Tonys in Radio City Music Hall. And then as of 2011, or since 2011, I should say, the Tonys have been held in either Radio City Music Hall or the Beacon Theater.
Something that I thought was really cool, too, is they were saying during the 80s, the Tonys became known as the finest award program on TV. Which I thought was really cool because, you know, now it's definitely the least watched out of all of them. And, you know, I feel like it is a little bit harder for it to reach out to people who are not musical theater people, unlike the other award shows. But I think I really liked that at least one point in time, it was like the highest award show.
Yeah. And I think it goes to show that even to this day, I think it's the Academy Awards, the Tonys win special TV airing or some award like that. They win every year. I think there was like 1 year they didn't win recently. I think they're still top tier. They just aren't shown or not enough people watch, I should say. We're going to move on to the awards and how that all works. It all starts with nominations. There are about 50 people. They're rotating theater professionals. They serve for 3 years and they have to go see every show that has opened on Broadway, basically. They go see these shows and then they all vote. And the top ones are the ones that get nominated. You can actually find a list of these people on their website, which I think is awesome. So I know right now when I looked, Celia Keenan-Bolger was one of them. Benj Pasek from Pasek and Paul is one of them. So there's all these big names like actors, composers, directors, all those type of people. But there's also people like producers and theater owners. And I think it's really cool that we get that whole gamut of theater professionals.
Yeah, it makes me feel better to know that there are so many people. There's about 831 people, I think, currently. So it makes me feel better to know that there is so many people out there looking. And then it's people from different, like, they're all theater people, but it's, like, different theater backgrounds, which I like, too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, I think it's good to say, too, that once they're nominated, the 831 are the people who do the voting. They have to attend every performance. And if there's one that they don't log in their digital log system, they can't vote. I think it's super fair. Like, you have to see everything if you're going to vote.
Just some cool stuff about the awards before we go in. They have changed, you know, as we said at the beginning, there was 11. Now they have 26. So they've, you know, they've jumped in categories. They've changed from time to time the categories that they have. They've had some retired awards. One that they had that I thought was really cool, only in 1948, they had Best Newcomer. So it was like the best person in their debut role. They only had it in 1948. Two people won, and that was it. That was the only time they've ever had that award. But I was like, that's kind of cool for those, you know, new upcoming people, besides just having, like, best performance in a musical. It gave them kind of, like, another boost to get a Tony. Like I said, again, it was only in that 1 year, something that I found. Rules for picking their new musical, for like best new musical, it has to be something that's not determined to be a classic. And this actually became a problem. I did not write the year. 2014, 2012, whenever Hedwig and the Angry Inch came out. Mm-hmm. Because it was on West End twice before it actually came to Broadway. And so when it came to Broadway, it wasn't eligible for Best New Musical. And I guess there was a lot of issues with this because technically it's never been on Broadway, but I guess it was already considered as a classic and well-known. People already knew what it was because it had been on West End twice, so it had to be Best Revival, which I believe it won. So ties do occur. An example of that happened in 2009, both Billy Elliot and Next to Normal tied for Best Orchestrations. As of right now, there's 26 different categories. We're not going to list all of them because you don't want to sit here listening to us go through and listing them. But, you know, there's the big ones like Best Musical, Best Lead Actor, Lead Actress, Best Choreography, you know, those ones. And then there's also things like set design and sound and all those sort of things, too. So there's tons of different ones. And then, you know, there is changes that we've seen. At the 39th Tony Awards in 85, they had no lead actor, no lead actress, or no choreography awards. There is no mention of why they decided to cut them. They came back the year after, but for some reason, they just didn't have those for the Tonys that year. So there was another problem with what constitutes as a musical. So at the 2000s Tony, this came up because the winner of the Best Musical, which was Contact, was kind of odd. It was a lot of dance, no singing, very minimal dialogue, and the music was all pre-recorded. So there was no orchestra. It was all pre-recorded music and songs. And so it won, and people are like, is this really a musical or not? So they actually ended up making a new category because of this, like, does this count as a musical or does it not? So we do see these changes over, you know, the years of categories leaving, coming back. But for the most part, we kind of had the same 26 for a while now.
It's been a good while. Do you know what category they added? Just out of curiosity.
They created a new category, Best Special Theatrical Event.
Oh, okay. One thing I always thought was interesting, speaking of awards, is that I've never really thought until 2018 when this happened about the original score category. I always just think, okay, original score, we're talking musicals, except Angels in America, which is a play, was nominated, which I think is awesome, first of all. I think it really opens a door to more possibilities for what a theatrical score could be. Like, a score doesn't have to be just, oh, I am writing songs, and then we're underscoring all that kind of stuff. It's also underscoring for plays. So I think that's awesome.
Yeah, and that's actually a really good segue for us to talk about what are some of the big moments, big winners that we've seen or had. What are the ones that are just like, that's really cool. Wow. I'm going to just shoot some fun facts at y'all. So these are just some like general information. So the play with the most wins is The Coast of Utopia, which I have never heard of. Death of a Salesman is the first show to win Best Production in 4 different years. So I thought that was cool. You know, last week we talked about how many times Anything Goes has been revived. So it's kind of cool to see like play-wise, because I feel like when you talk about Broadway, it's always a lot of musicals and plays kind of get not as much of a spotlight, so it's always fun to kind of throw them in there. Obviously, musical with most Tony nominations, Hamilton, musical with the most Tonys, The Producers. So the theater that's housed the most Tony winners, did you already look at it?
It's the Richard Rodgers.
Okay, I was going to be like, yes, but if you already know, yeah. I thought that was really cool because I was like, as soon as I read it, I was like, oh yes, I know Hamilton was in there and In the Heights was in there and a bunch of other shows. I think there was like 11 different shows.
It's interesting to see sort of the shows, what houses have held what shows.
Yeah, because somewhere I was reading too, there's like 41 different Broadway theaters.
Yeah.
Which I was like, did not realize there was so many different ones. So yeah, to have one theater that has like, that's the theater you want your show in.
Literally. One person we need to bring up while we're talking about this is Audra McDonald. She holds 6 Tony Awards, I believe it is.
Yeah.
She has 6 Tony Awards in each of the acting categories. So you have featured performer in a play and a musical, and then you have leading performer in a play and a musical. And she's won in each of those categories. She's the only person to win in each of those categories. And I think that's awesome. I think it's so cool. And I love her. I've seen her perform once. I saw her, well, twice. She did a concert tour 2 years ago or 3 years ago, and I saw her perform there. Oh my God. Ugh. So good. Last year when I went to New York, I saw her and Frankie and Johnny at the Clair de Lune, which is so good. I love her. I love Audra. I want an episode just on Audra. So
yeah, I mean, I watched her in Private Practice. So
I loved her in Private Practice.
Yeah, with Tay Diggs. He was also in Private Practice. Why they never had a musical episode? Sorry, we're going to go on a side note for a second. So the same creator of Grey's Anatomy made Private Practice, and they have a musical episode in Grey's Anatomy, which is not very well liked because only like one of the people whose name I can't think of off the top of my head can actually sing. Like she's an actual like actress that can, well, they're all actresses. But anyway, she also made Private Practice, and they had Audra McDonald and Taye Diggs as the like two of the lead people, and they never had a musical episode in that show. And I'm like, why? You have this talent. Use it.
Literally. But instead we get, you know, Riverdale musicals.
Just a couple other ones that I was like, I'm like looking over my notes, ones that are actually kind of interesting to throw out. So there's two shows that have the most nominations with the fewest wins. One was Mean Girls and one was Scottsboro Boys, which actually is also the most nominated show for closing. It closed 6 months before the Tonys. It only ran for 2 months. And it sounds like there was some issues with it. But I just thought that was, you have this show that ran for 2 months and got 12 nominations.
The other thing we should talk about is the composer with the most. Sondheim is the composer with the most Tonys at 8. And then also the choreographer with the most is Fosse at 8 as well.
And then there's 4 musicals who have won the big 6. So best musical, score, book, lead actor and actress, direction. That's South Pacific in 1950, Sweeney Todd in 79, Hairspray in 2003, and The Band's Visit, which I haven't really looked into more, but...
It's on my list.
Yeah. And then Harold Prince is the current holder of the most Tonys overall. He has won 21 Tony Awards. If we talked about this. I can't remember. Oh, yeah. We talked about it last week. I couldn't remember if it was recorded or not. That for the role in Pippin. So that's the only role that has both sexes have won, which is really cool. You know, we talked a little bit last week about having some like swaps. I mean, there's tons of other information, but I don't want to just be sitting here. I don't want y'all bored. For those of you who don't know, EGOT is, you know, winners who have the Emmy, Grammy, Oscar, and Tony. They have all 4. There's only, I think, like 15 people or something like that who actually do have all 4. There's a lot of people who are missing one or the other. I didn't write down all of the people. There's currently 15 people who need a Tony still. I didn't write down all of them. But some of the ones that I was like really surprised about was Randy Newman, which I was like, okay, he can, I mean, he did a lot of music stuff for like Toy Story and that kind of stuff. So Barbra Streisand, Cher. And then the other one, the one that really got me was Julie Andrews.
Barbra Streisand is missing a Tony.
Yeah. She might have a special one.
I was going to say, I think her and Julie Andrews both have special Tonys, which makes me so mad that they don't count for like an actual Tony.
Yeah.
Like, come on, just give them the EGOT, please. Obviously, we're not getting the Tonys this year, and I'm wondering if we're going to, how everything's going to play out, like the musicals that would have been nominated this year, or well, shows in general, I shouldn't just say musicals. I wonder if they're going to be at a later date, or like rolled over to the following year, or whenever they pick back up. But then it's not like shows are happening right now to be nominated.
I feel like it makes it really hard because I feel like all the shows right now are in one of two categories. Like there's already shows that have opened and have already been playing for a while, or like not a while, but you know, a month or a few months. And then there's shows who didn't even have their debut. And so there has been questions about that, especially, you know, supposedly they have postponed it till fall, but let's be honest, it's probably not going to happen this year. And so the question is, yeah, what does happen next year? Like, do they just combine 2 years worth of Tonys and do they split these shows in half? Like the ones that have already opened have like a, like something different, because it is hard. How is that fair too for people who are making new shows and like, hey, my show is going to open February 2021 and now I'm competing with, you know, something that's been on, like has been existing for the last, you know, like 7, 8, 9 months and people at least know about. So that does make it really difficult knowing like how are they going to do this year.
Mm-hmm. Definitely. And my other thought is the shows that aren't even going to continue, like shows that aren't going to open on Broadway anymore, if that's going to happen, like some of the ones that were supposed to open and didn't. So I'd be interested to see. I've listened to a couple of them. I have my thoughts on what would win, at least musically, because I haven't seen any of the shows. I'm interested to see what ends up winning and all that kind of stuff. I've listened to most. I think the only show that could at least be nominated that I haven't listened to yet is Tina, the Tina Turner musical. It's on my list, though. However, the revival, you have Company, West Side Story, and Carolina or Change. I think Company all the way.
So I frequent the Broadway subreddit a lot, and I remember there was a lot of backing for one of these shows that has not... Like, it doesn't have the cast recording yet, or didn't open or anything. And so it's interesting that you say, like, oh, you think you know which one probably would win. Because, I mean, fuck it, I'll just say it. So Flying Over Sunset on the subreddit from people who have been in the area said that it had, like, really good potential. And from what obviously there's not a lot. There's no cast recording. It didn't open. I don't think it was supposed to open till like, end of April. So it wasn't even, like... close to opening, but it was getting a lot of good traction. And when I looked up the show, like, this looks really interesting. But then at the same time, I know there's a couple other ones on here that are very popular that are talked about a lot. It's hard to tell. It's really just a lot of us speculating right now with...
Exactly. I mean, like, we live on the West Coast. We're not seeing these shows, so we can only speculate.
Yeah. It's like, let me base this off of what I've heard and what little bit...
I've seen.
Yeah, because I'm trying to think, like, even when I went, a lot of them weren't even over there yet.
No.
And I think Moulin Rouge had just opened, and I know Lightning Thief was there, and I think that was it.
When I was in New York last July, Moulin Rouge had its first preview. It was either the first preview or opening night. I don't remember which one. I think it was opening night because everybody was there that day. But yeah, most of the shows have recordings, but Diana, Miss Doubtfire, and Flying Over Sunset don't have recordings. So it's sad that we aren't able to listen to them yet. And we won't be able to.
My fingers have just crossed over for Flying Over Sunset. Like, it just sounds really interesting. I'm just backing it right now. That's my that's my one that I'm, like, ready for.
So the Tonys are all about performances, obviously. I mean, they're the theater awards. We have to talk performances. So we actually came up with a list of some of our favorite performances, and we wanted to share them with you. I'll start. We're going to alternate a little bit. My first one that I absolutely love is the 1982 performance of Dreamgirls. Obviously, I went a little further back because I knew Sarah was going to stay more modern. So I tried to go a little further back and find some stuff, but I ended up still coming up to modern day, to the Tony Awards that I have watched. But I tried to go back a little bit as well. So 1982, Dreamgirls, It's All Over and I Am Telling You, which is like the whole fight scene. Ooh, Jennifer Holliday. Ooh, just there's so much raw emotion in that performance, especially when she gets into And I Am Telling You. Ooh, there's so much belting. And not from Jennifer Holliday, from all the girls. Like, you can't go wrong. It's a good performance. Watch it.
Yeah, I always forget that Dreamgirls is an older show because I did watch the movie when it came out in, like, 2000-something with, like, Jennifer Hudson. And so I have this song from the movie on my playlist, and I always forget that it's an older. So when I opened it, it was that song. I was like, oh, God, because it is such a good song. So my first go-to, you know, didn't figure it out when I said it earlier. You'll see it when we talk about this show. My favorite show is Hamilton. So my first go-to is the Hamilton performance, but not just because it's my favorite show, but one, I really like in general when Tony performances combine songs. I like it better. I have another one on here that when we get to it does that too. I feel like it just kind of gives a little bit more of a preview of it when they have, like, at least, you know, two or more songs kind of combined in. And it was also a really good performance because it was the day after the Pulse shooting. And so they chose not to do their performance with their guns. And you don't need it. Like, you don't notice the difference at all. And it's still just so beautifully done. And I started crying a little bit. And I was like, I'm going to die in July. Like, I'm just going to be bawling. I thought I was over this. I'm not. My Hamilton phase will never end.
Before I watched it, we had talked about how they didn't use guns. You really don't need them at all. It's almost more powerful. So my next line, I know Sarah, she has her opinions, but my next one is Chorus Line, the 1976 original production. They do the full opening sequence. I think it's just so iconic. I mean, from the moment where you hear the ba-da-da-ba-da-ba-da-ba, but that's also not the first thing you hear. There, you see them in rehearsal, and then finally he does the 5, 6, 7, 8, ba-da-ba-ba. And if you're not doing the choreography as I do that, you're incorrect. But then also, the ending of it is so iconic when they have just those chord hits, and they walk up and they hit with their headshots. It's just so iconic.
I've grown to appreciate A Chorus Line a little more. It's still not my favorite, but there is songs I really like from it. It was a very long performance, which I feel like we don't get anymore. Like, it was like a 7-minute performance, which I thought, you know, you watch these newer ones and they're all like 4 or 5 minutes, which, I mean, part of it too could just be the amount of shows they have. You look at the older ones, sometimes there's only 3 or 4 nominations for Best Musical, whereas now there's 6 or 7, so that could be part of it too. So it definitely was a longer performance, but I did like it, and I do agree about having their headshots at the end. And then the other thing, just throwing it back to last week, you know, we mentioned Gilmore Girls, and we were talking about Sutton Foster being on Bunheads and the revival and stuff. Kelly Bishop, who was in Gilmore Girls, was also in the original A Chorus Line.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah, I only knew that because of the Gilmore Guys podcast. Shout out to them. But yeah, I've grown to appreciate it more. Like I said, still not my favorite, but I feel like my musical theater journey, I feel like I've grown more appreciative to older shows that I didn't like as much. So I tried to separate what performances I liked, not necessarily just picking them from shows I really liked. Like, there's definitely shows that I like whose Tony performances were fine. They weren't bad, but it wasn't like, ooh, this is great. So the next couple are ones from shows that I've actually never really seen or looked into, but I really liked their performance. My next one is the performance from Kinky Boots. I kind of vaguely know the show. Like, I know it's like Cyndi Lauper. I know Brent Urie was in it for a while. We've seen them in concert a few times, and he's saying girls just want to have fun, like right after his time in Kinky Boots. But outside of that, I've never listened to the music. I've never really looked into it. It's not one that I dislike. It's like, I'll eventually get around to it. But I really liked their performance. And I think this kind of goes into that idea of letting them perform is a big deal. And it does give that boost. And there are shows that you might not be into or watch otherwise. And this is kind of how that was. Like, I watched this and was like, yeah, maybe I should look into this sooner than later. But other than that, it was just going to be one of those shows that's like, oh yeah, I know it and it exists. That's cool. So I thought it was really interesting. They had really good dancing. The song was fun. It was a really good performance.
I think what you were saying too about letting them perform, I think it's huge because it is a huge audience drawer. Sometimes if a show isn't able to perform, or a performance is done, or they do, or something happens, it will ruin sales. I mean, it doesn't happen often, but it can. I think about shows that have chosen to do a solo number, and I'm not for that.
Yeah, and on the flip side, like Waitress kind of did that. They did sort of their opening number, which was very short, and then they have Sarah Bareilles come out and sing on the piano for the remainder of the time. And I've already listened through the Waitress soundtrack. I have like one song from the show, so I'm already not a big Waitress fan. But watching that, I'm just like, this doesn't make me want to really see your show. This is kind of your like, hey, come see my show. Look how cool we are. Look how much fun it is. And this is like nothing against Sarah Bareilles personally, like, or her as a performer, but that's not what I want to go see. Like, if I want to watch Sarah Bareilles on the piano, I'll just go to a Sarah Bareilles concert.
I think there's only very specific moments you can let someone do a solo number, or you should let somebody do a solo number. I have one on my list, but one that comes off the top of my head is the If Then performance where they had Adina. You can do Adina because she's a big name. They've done the same with Bernadette Peters, Patti LuPone. Oddly enough, both of them were for Gypsy. Bernadette did Rose's Turn, and then Patti did Everything's Coming Up Roses. Those are okay to do.
I think it's different too, depending on what your show is. Like those shows, that's what it's about. It's about her.
My next one is actually sort of a combination of two. I chose Pippin. I want to talk about the 72 original production and then the 2013 revival. We're talking Fosse choreography. It's iconic. The one thing that drew me when I first saw the Pippin performance is at the beginning with the hands, and all you see is Ben Vereen's face and the hands. And I'm like, oh, and it's so cool. And then you have all these Fosse moves. As I was rewatching stuff, I came across the 2013 circus adaptation, which I love to begin with. But as I was watching it, they kept so many of Fosse's moves in there. And I think it's so cool. Like the leading player, I don't even know how to describe it. And maybe it has a name, but she does the hip hop with the knee bent and the hand spread. She does that move, which is a huge Fosse move. And then even then, there's moments where they're like, okay, let's feature this dude doing a handstand as he's walking down a ladder. But in the back, you see these other people doing these Fosse moves. And I'm like, yes, yes. And it's such a fun number. And it's such a good performance piece.
This is another show. Actually, most of your shows, I don't know. like I know of them. I know the name, but they're not ones I've looked into. So this is another show that I didn't know. And I clicked on it before I even looked up what the show was about. So I clicked on it and I was like, this is really cool. And it was funny because I was also watching the playlist on YouTube. I was going back and forth between like watching one from there and watching one of yours. And it was funny because then the 2013 one was the next one on it. So I did watch both back to back. But I was just like, this is really cool. And again, I definitely want to look into it in general. But I think it was one of the first performances where I just like eyes open, staring the whole time. Usually I like kind of watch and pay attention to other things. All right, I'm up next. So another one, I mean, you kind of just talked about this, and you need to have big performances. I'm always a sucker for the dancing, probably because I can't dance to save my life. So I am always fascinated. And there's always a ton of, like, great female dancers. So it's kind of nice to see that, like, technical greatness in the guys, because that's not a common thing. So I did Newsies. And again, another show I don't really know. I do know this song mostly because it was on a TikTok, so then I put it on my playlist. Also, you already know, but I recently, it sounds so awful, recently discovered who Jeremy Jordan is, and I hate myself that it took so long. So I'm so sorry, Jeremy Jordan. I know you will never listen to this, but please accept my apology. I didn't watch Smash. I just started watching it like a couple weeks ago. So he just kind of was under the radar for me, and I'm really sad because I've all of a sudden have started discovering everything he's in, and I am in love. Not in a weird, like, obsessive way, but like in a, I very much appreciate his performances. He is very talented. But I really like the Newsies one. It's Seize the Day, a lot of dancing. It's just fun to watch. It's a fun show. I mean, it's a Disney show. I feel like it's a little bit different than, like, their other Disney shows, because it's just not a princess story, which is nice. The dancing's great. It's fun. I was like, oh, I'd go see this. You can't go wrong with a Disney show, so.
No. I mean, well, you can, but we don't talk about those shows.
Wait, am I missing something?
Tarzan.
Oh,
I count. Love Tarzan, but, you know.
Yeah, we're talking about Disney shows, though. I'm ready for my Princess and the Frog musical.
So I know we were just talking about how important it is to have a, like, big chorus number. My next number is a solo piece. So it's actually the 2000 revival of Company, Raul Esparza singing Being Alive. And it's just such a nice moment. I think also part of this goes to me falling in love with Company. And I really love the character of Bobby, who Raul played. He sings the song Being Alive, which, ooh, the emotion that he has when he sings it, ugh, it kills me. And I think the other reason I think that it's okay for him to do a solo piece in this moment is because this is a show people know. It was up for revival at this point. So I think it's okay to not do, like, the opening number or another big chorus number.
So the next one, I kind of combined the two of them just because it's the same show. They did the same songs. But I think it's important to talk about both of them. This is a show that I already know and love and have seen, so naturally made sense. But it's Spring Awakening. So I included both the Spring Awakening performance and then the Death Revival, which I'll talk about in a moment. So the Spring Awakening performance, this is the one I was talking about where they combined four songs. So they start with Mama Who Bored Me, they go into the reprise of that. Then they do Bitch of a Living and Totally Fucked, which I mean, I like the whole soundtrack, or I like the whole cast recording. I don't want to get hate mail for saying soundtrack. I like the whole cast recording of that show. But, I mean, if you are not screaming Totally Fucked when you're listening to it, whether your life is going great, doesn't matter. Maybe it's also just because I also grew up on pop punk emo music. And so you always act like everything sucks even when it's fine. So it's great. But I really like that they combined the four songs, which was really enjoyable. And they're fun to watch. They're upbeat songs. It is a show I love. It's probably in my top 10 shows. I saw it when it came around in 2010. I wish they would give it a revival. I mean, they did. They gave it the Death Revival, but I feel like that didn't go around as much and didn't get as much hype as it should have, because that one was also great. So I watched that performance too, and I was like, wow, I wish we did this for more shows. Something that I found really interesting was Ally Stoker was in this, which really threw me off, because, like, see her go by, and I'm like, oh, that's cool. They got people from other performances. And then I remembered, oh, no, this is like 2 years before Oklahoma. Like, this is not the same year. My brain, like, forgot. So I was like, oh, cool. Like, good for her. Like, you know, she was in, like, all these awesome shows. So I thought that was really cool. And I actually saw a TikTok recently. I can't remember if I sent it to you. And I'll put it on our Twitter account. It was two girls that were signing a song from Hamilton. And someone had even said, like, we need a Death Revival of Hamilton. Well, it's not, I guess, and I don't know if it counts as a revival if it's still currently playing everywhere. When I go to performances and I overlap with when it's the Death performance, like, I don't watch them the whole time, but I always end up kind of glancing over because it's really fascinating to watch. And I just think it's important that we have that exposure. And it's a really good one. Like, if you haven't watched that one, highly recommend. Very good.
I think that the Spring Awakening performance does it really well, too. They do a lot of it. They'll add a lot of sign language into the choreography, and it's really cool. Actually, it's good that you brought up the Deaf West revival of Spring Awakening, because my next show, I believe, I could be wrong, is actually directed by the same person. So mine is Once on This Island, the revival, because, oh boy, first of all, they were in a Circle in the Square theater. So it's a round theater. So they had to bring people onto stage and create that atmosphere, which I think is great, instead of just trying to adapt to the Tony stage. The other thing that I really like about it is they formatted it so nicely. So it's essentially a mashup of three different songs. They do We Dance, and We Dance is where they sort of tell the story. They give you the beginning where they're like, there was a storm and a little girl was swept away, but she was saved by the gods, and you get the introduction to the gods. You still get Teen Moon's big entrance when she grows up. So then they go into Mama Will Provide, which is just such a great song. And this was with Alex Newell. Speaking of Ali Stroker, too, they were both on the Glee project. Fun. We timed these two out perfectly, and we didn't even mean to. They start Mama Will Provide, and he rocks it. And then in the middle of Mama Will Provide, they go into Waiting for Life to Begin, the reprise, which happens right after Mama Will Provide normally. And then they go back into Mama Will Provide and end it. And it's just such a good performance. I think it really gets the show across. Plus, you have Nathan Lane interacting with a goat, which I think is awesome. So...
Yeah, I don't want to go into it too much just because I don't want us to get off track. But in general, I wish there was more theater in the round sort of theaters. Actually, when we went in November, like, I debated buying tickets to Oklahoma just because I could go to it. There's also a theater in Sacramento that's like that. And I always love going to the performances. Unfortunately, they're only open in the summertime. But I've seen a few shows there. And it's just, it is, because it's such a different way you have to stage. You don't have a way where you're just, oh, I only have to do facing this one way. Like, you have to do the staging where it is all around. So I would recommend, if you have a theater anywhere, I mean, Sacramento's not close to us. I don't want to pinpoint where we live. But if you have a theater near you, recommend seeing a show in that way. It's just, it's different.
It's a full different experience. It's engaging in a different way. I mean, we saw at the Sacramento one, we saw Little Mermaid. And that was crazy. But even as an actor, from an actor's perspective, because I've done one show in the round, and it's just a different experience. I really enjoy it.
Yeah, this last summer I saw Shrek and In the Heights both in it. And it's cool too, because yeah, not only do they use the stage, like, they also use the sides, and they tell you, like, they won't let you go in and see it at certain times depending on when you get there, because they might be using those sidelines. So as I was looking, after Berkeley had called me out on only having newer shows, which we both knew were going to happen, I'm like, let me not get offended on the truth. But I do have one older show that I love, 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 love. And so I'm like, okay, let me look at the original performances of this, even though it was revived a couple years ago. All I did was just type in Tony performances, Hello Dolly. And the first one I got was great. So it's the 1968 version, but it's done all black cast. It's Pearl Bailey playing Dolly. They're doing Put On Your Sunday Clothes, which is, like, you know, the really popular song from Hello Dolly. It was also the song that was in WALL-E that rhymes. And then it goes into her singing Goodbye, Dearie. So it's nice because it starts with, like, the, you know, again, combining two songs. It starts with one of their upbeat stage shows and then ends kind of with a solo song. But it's so good. And it just makes me really sad. We've talked about this before, and I think I went on a rant to you yesterday a little bit about it. But we've talked about, like, it's 2020. Why do we not have shows with more diverse casts? Like, certain shows have to have, obviously, certain people of certain colors. But other than that, there's so many shows, and I'm not going to call out shows, but unless your character doesn't specifically have to be of a certain race, oh my God, there's so many talented people out there. Please. I'm watching this and I'm like, this is awesome. It's an all black cast. This is great. And especially in the 60s, like, racism's still real. We're seeing it right now.
One thing I really like, for those of you who do have TikTok, is Megan Helwig. I don't have her at, I think it's at H-E-L-W-I-G-G or just one G.
I don't know. We'll tweet something out from her.
Yeah.
We'll put them on our Twitter so you can find her.
Yeah. But one thing I love is that right now she, because Tony time is coming up, she is doing underrepresentation at the Tonys, and she's going by different groups. And I love that. I love that she's giving them that voice. So my next one is the 1980 performance of Evita. I feel like I needed a Patty performance in here. And while Gypsy was a very close second, I just think Patty just sings the show so well. And the song they did was A New Argentina. And that's the one where she's up screaming. She does it like four times in the song. And I'm like, okay, Patty, sure. Just wreck me, please. That's all I had to say about that. There's literally nothing else I wanted to say about that.
I think I got super thrown off because I think earlier I saw they had Gypsy, which is another one of my personal favorites. And I was like, yeah, I'll get to watch that one. And then I was like, oh, no, it's gone.
If you want another Patty performance, her gypsy performance of Everything's Coming Up Roses with a younger Laura Benanti is super good as well. Just Patty. Okay, next.
This is kind of where I start to switch. This one's not a Tony show performance, but I think it's one that's important to talk about. I also included the Parkland students from 2 years ago, 2018, their performance of Seasons of Love. It's beautiful. I was crying laughing, and not like, oh yeah, like there was a tear, like no, like I was literally sobbing. I'm like gonna try not to cry even talking about it. It's such an emotional and strong performance, and in general it's just, it's a beautiful performance. The fact that they, you know, invited these students, I think is beautiful. I feel like it really bridges this gap between like professional theater and schools, which is important. You know, their teacher won this excellency in, I can't remember the exact name of it, but the like excellency in drama award, which is a newer thing that they have, which helps highlight different drama teachers around the country. It's a very beautiful, well done performance. I think the fact that the Tonys opened up the stage to them, it'll make you cry. I'm getting teary eyed talking about it. I can tell Berkeley is.
Yeah, I'm tearing up and you're just talking about it.
Yeah. If you have not watched it, I highly recommend. It is a very beautiful and well done performance. And I mean, this one and the next one are both things that, even though they are a couple years old, they're still just so relevant to today and are just very beautiful to watch.
I remember watching that Tony's, and when the Parkland students came up and they announced that, I was bawling my eyes out. I mean, to be fair, I just cry a lot. Same. For happy reasons. I get happy and I cry, but this just made me so emotional. And yes, I love it.
Yeah, Excellence in Theater Education, Tony, which is also presented by Carnegie Mellon. They have a really big theater program. A lot of our friends have gone there. Not like our real friends, but people who are professional actors that I pretend I'm with.
They're our friends.
Yeah. You know, like my friend Leslie and my friend Josh, my friend Renee.
Yeah, I was going to say, Renee and I are homies. What are you talking about? So my next show is the 2009 production of Next to Normal. First of all, the show is really good. I've never seen it, but I know the music. It's a powerful performance. When I think about watching the Tonys, this is one of the first performances I think about. It's just so good. And I just, I mean, it's Alice Ripley and Aaron Tveit, and it's just, it's a good performance.
This was another one. I mean, I feel like I just sound like a broken record, but just really quick, this is another one where it's a show I don't know. I watched the performance and was like, this is interesting. I'm also kind of a sucker for musical theater that sounds slightly different is always kind of enjoyable, which is why, you know, I do love Spring Awakening. Yeah, I was like, ooh, I'm going to check this show out too. Being a bit of a bummer again, not quite as sad, but another one that is not a performance, but was at the Tonys. And I think especially with everything we're seeing go on right now, you know, it's been very, very scary the last week. And hopefully by the time this has come out, has gotten better and not worse. This is Lynn's Love is Love speech. And it's just so beautiful. It's so well written, you know, it rhymes, which is like, it's Lynn, you know, and it starts with him talking about his love for Vanessa and all this greatness. But then it also, this is, again, was the day after the poll shooting. So it has that. And it's just this reminder of like, every day is important. We don't know what the future will be like. We're not promised a next day. So to appreciate while you're here. Again, you know, it was another one where it's like, this is 4 years ago. This was 2016. Like, I always forget that Hamilton has been around for so freaking long already because it's still so popular. But, you know, this was 4 years ago. And you look at just everything that's been happening this past week. And again, like, by the time this comes out, God, I hope it's better. But it's scary out right now. And you just see this. And it's just like a nice positive reminder of finding the happiness and hope in life. Again, it could be slightly biased because I love Lynn. And anything he does is great to me. Like, but it's a beautiful speech. Like, it's not even just about like, oh, let me thank Vanessa and thank all my friends and great. Like, no, like, definitely a statement speech.
I agree. It's so powerful. There were a lot of, maybe it wasn't just that Tony Awards. No, but the past couple ones, there have been really good speeches. Lindsay Mendez's speech when she won for Carousel. That one makes me cry too. I wouldn't say it's as powerful as Lynn's, but there's a moment where she talks about like when she first arrived in New York. I won't get into it, but it's really powerful as well. My next performance I'm talking about is the 2016 Color Purple performance. They performed Mysterious Ways and I'm Here. It was like a mashup of the two. And I mean, it's just so powerful. Like, you have Danielle Brooks, Heather Headley, and then also, of course, Cynthia Erivo ending it with I'm Here. And it reminds me a lot of the Dreamgirls performance. There's just so much raw emotion, specifically when Cynthia comes out, because that's when you get the powerful song. The Mysterious Ways is more of a fun dance party song. That's a bad way to put it, but it's more of a fun song, upbeat song. But Cynthia Erivo comes out and sings I'm Here, and there's just so much emotion, and I love it. So the last thing that's super important with the Tonys is the opening number and the host. And I think over the past decade plus, we've seen that the host really kind of matters. One of my favorite things to watch, I don't know what year it was, but Whoopi Goldberg hosted. And it's not her opening performance. She would come out as different characters from shows. Like, she came out as Christine at one point, and I just think it's really funny. So I wanted to talk about everyone's favorite host, Neil Patrick Harris. Neil Patrick Harris always has the best opening numbers. Although, I must say, none of his are my favorite.
Yeah, I was going to say, as you were saying that, I was like, James Corden's good. He's good.
No, okay, so yeah, no, Neil Patrick Harris and James Corden all the way. Sorry, Hugh Jackman. Sorry, Rosie O'Donnell from the 90s, early 2000s. But Neil Patrick Harris has a bunch of opening numbers that are just so good. His first one, I believe, was It's Not Just for Gays Anymore, which is hilarious. And then he has Bigger, which is not my favorite. It's not the best performance, but it might be my favorite opening number he's done. I just love the go, Neil, go. It just cracks me up. I was watching it earlier today. And then he has What If Life Was More Like Theater, too, which is really good. The one that kills it for me is James Corden's 2016 one. That could be me. First of all, he opens up with the Hamilton skit. So then he has like a little monologue, and then he goes into when he was a kid, and you see him as a kid, and then he goes through all these shows, and then the, like I said, I cry a lot about, like, for happy reasons. Not because I'm sad. But there's a moment where kids come out on stage, and he's talking about to all these kids who are making their debut as Tree Number 3 and this and Bliss, and then the lights go, like, it goes to a spotlight on him. And then he's like, ladies and gentlemen, your nominated actors and actresses for 2016, and the lights come up and the kids have been replaced by all the nominees. And it's such a beautiful, oh, I'm getting teary-eyed. It's such a beautiful moment. It just gets me every time I watch it. That is my favorite Tony performance. I also really enjoy the medleys that they do. Like, 2010 did a medley, but like, nah, I love this one.
Yeah, I really liked the 2016 one too. It also reminded me, which made sense. I mean, I watched it, obviously, when it happened, but then when I was rewatching it, too, he did something similar with Lynn and Emily Blunt after Mary Poppins, which we'll just tweet it out when it happens because it's not Tony-related, but where they're, like, going through, like, I think it was, like, 20 shows in 20 minutes or something, like, or, like, it was, or, like, 20 shows in 10 minutes, and they're constantly just changing, and they're, like, singing all these different musical songs and stuff, which it was kind of, like, a similar thing, and I was like, oh, yeah, I love this just, like, quick switch up. Also, a fun one, which I sent to you yesterday, when you watch that one, there's a part where he's singing, I can't remember, he's singing something, and then he goes into, like, Rose's turn, and he's, like, having, like, a moment where he's, like, breaking down, and then he's, like, oh, no, I ruined the Tonys, and, like, Oprah, did I ruin it? And Oprah's, like, you're doing okay. Watch the guy in the background on the left of him, I don't know who it is, but he was, like, wait, that's Oprah. You can see him, like, mouth, like, that's Oprah.
I love that so much.
It's like, I'd, like, go back, I was, like, this is great, yes, because that would be me.
That was me when Alice Ripley was behind me at Birdland. So the only other thing I just wanted to slightly mention is that every year they do an in memoriam. And I think it was last year they had Cynthia Erivo sing this song. It was beautiful. Obviously, the Tonys aren't happening this year, so we won't have that. And I'm wondering if they're going to be shown at some point. Regardless, you can actually get the in memoriam list on the website. And I think it's a beautiful, I think it's great that they're still honoring them in some way. So we will link that as well in the description in case you want to go take a look at that. So that was our talk on the Tonys. I hope you enjoyed that. Just a quick little teaser for our next episode. A woman goes to meet friends and ends up with two different identities. What is it? I don't know. I mean, I know. But do you know? You know, because
no, I like to think that we just write the description and then we find a musical that fits into it.
Yes, we make up a description and then we decide what works best. So if you want to take a guess, where can they take a guess at?
So you can find us on Twitter. We're at MTBC Podcast for Musical Theater Book Club Podcast, or you can email us at mtbcpodcast@gmail.com. Please email us, tweet at us. I'm constantly checking them because I'm home. So what else am I going to do? So please, please send us stuff. Interact with us. We're fun.
Definitely interact with us. We're fun. And maybe yeah, also, stalk us. Find our regular social medias too. Stalk us.
I have five Instagrams. So whichever one, whatever thing you are interested in, I probably have an Instagram for it.
True.
Also, I don't think I've been saying this, but rate, you know, review, subscribe. That's how people find us. We found out recently that Apple doesn't post the podcast for non-subscribers until a few hours later. So if you want to listen to it right away, you need to be subscribing. Otherwise, it may take some time for it to post that day. That's also how other people find out about us. Tell your friends, tell your neighbors, tell your enemies, tell everyone you know.
Yeah, let everyone be a part of this talk. Let's all talk. Let's all talk about musical theater. Thanks for listening. And hopefully we'll hear about the Tony sometime soon.